Hi, fans. It's the Big E here to tell you about a fantastic family essential I discovered that will help make this sports pack season a less stressful one for you and your family. It's the Exergen Smart Glow Temporal Scanner Thermometer. It's simple to use, quick, and an accurate thermometer. It's the number one choice of pediatricians and nurses nationwide, and even has a backlit display so you can enjoy those night games without waking your sick child. Hey, with this action-packed season of sports and back to school, I highly recommend Exergen. Check out Exergen.com.
Blog Talk Radio.
Pause.
You.
That was indeed a dramatic pause. You were. I was like, what happened?
You started speaking when the music hadn't faded out yet, so that's why.
But it was fading out. I blame you for not paying attention. It's never my fault. Remember that. No, I'm teasing.
We're very excited.
Today, okay, it was about a year ago last year, or am I wrong? Was it January of last year? Our guest paid us a visit.
Yeah,
it was our very
was.
First show. She was our guinea pig, and at the time I had pneumonia and could barely speak, and we were just kind of learning the ropes. And so we're excited to have her back, and we're hoping that perhaps, you know, we've learned something along the way. But she was just such a talk to. So. Niles, would you like to intro her? Or, I'm sorry, I'm just doing all the talking today.
Well, you know, that's fine with me. But, yeah, sure, I'll introduce. like we mentioned, you know, Mara was our very first guest, and we're just really happy to have her back. She's the author of the Midford Haven novels and stories, including the soon-to-be-released novel Why Hearts Keep Secrets. So, everybody, welcome back to the show, author Mara Pearl. Hi, Mara.
Thank you. Hi. It's so great to hear your voices again. And as I said, I just was so honored to be your very first guest. So really fun to be back.
Oh, man. I think when Tasha was talking about, you know, hopefully we've learned something since we started the show, I think I'm probably the one who's learned and had a chance to improve the most. I'm much more comfortable this time around than I was last time.
Well, that's great to set yourself a challenge in your life and grow. That's wonderful.
Yeah, it's been fun. It's been fun. So, but all right. So let's go ahead and get started. So Mara, we mentioned in the intro, you have a new book about to come out. Why Hearts Keep Secrets. Would you like to tell us a little bit about that, or talk a little bit about that?
I would. Thank you. So you know that I'm doing a series. It's going to be 5 novels altogether, and it's the Milford Haven novels that are set on the beautiful central coast of California. And book 2 is actually going to appear in time for Mother's Day. My publishers decided on that as a very good pub date, because my readers are mostly women, and we all just love Mother's Day, and it's a very good gift for, you know, for mothers and aunties and daughters and godmothers and dear friends and so forth. And so this one is about all the secrets that people have been keeping in Milford Haven and why they have been keeping these secrets. And So it's a chance to delve quite deeply into the characters and some of the issues and complexities. So as the series continues, you know, it's getting more complicated and more interesting, I hope, for our readers. It certainly is for me.
Cool. Yeah, I love a good character study when I pick up a novel. So you publish with Bellkeep Books. What's it like working with them? And tell us a little bit about the publishing process, if you would.
Yes. Well, publishing is really interesting these days. Just to give you a brief sketch of what has happened, I think over the last 10, even 20 years, some of the traditional publishing houses have either started connecting or being taken over, or being purchased by a larger company, consolidating, or just folding. And in the meanwhile, a lot of publishers have sprung up who are either independent or small press. And then thirdly, there is the self-publishing world. So there are now three options for getting published. And if you want to go the traditional route, you go through an agent. And if you want to do the self route, there are services that will help you get your book printed and, you know, posted to selling websites. However, there's something missing from the quote-unquote self world, which is, I guess the word would be compliance. So the publishing industry is a venerable one with wonderful standards in place. And so when you get a book from, let's say, Random House, there's a sense of trust that it will be beautifully edited, the cover will be well designed, the paper will be good quality. You know, you know that you're buying something that reaches a certain standard. In the world of self-publishing, that may not be the case. So the third option, independent publishing, pulls from the best of both of these worlds. So authors really, these days, must take more responsibility not only for the content of their book, but for the marketing of their book, no matter how they're published. And so publishers tend to say to the author, well, who is the real expert in this book anyway? Is it us or is it you? And, of course, it's really the author. The author's the one who's been living with the story for a long time and who has a sense of who will enjoy reading it best and can share that information then with the publisher. So you become partners, really, in how to present and how to market your book. So that's what I do with Bellkeep. And they're a fantastic team with many years of experience. But they also trust my judgment about Milford Haven. So I have more say in cover design, length of the book, timing of release, lots of considerations that used to be only the purview of the publisher without the author's input.
Cool. Yeah.
And you've had a lot of success with your books, too. Okay, I think you've won 27 literary awards, is that right?
Yeah, I think I just got the 28th.
Goodness, congratulations.
Yeah.
Oh, that's wonderful.
Thank you.
That's wonderful.
It is so encouraging, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's hard because writing is a solitary endeavor and you sort of spend many hours by yourself, you know, thinking this up and doing your work. So when it gets out there and it gets that kind of confirmation, let's say, it is very encouraging.
I can imagine. All right, Myra, tell us a little bit about what your writing process is like. What's a typical day in your writing life like?
Well, I'm just getting back to my typical day. I had the most fantastic parents, and they both passed away in the last 2 years. So I spent quite a bit of my time just focusing on them and, you know, explained to the publisher that I would have to be late with book 3 in the series, and they have been very understanding, which I really appreciate. And I guess we all understand, right? I mean, this is what happens in life. And I was fortunate to have my parents for as long as I did, and very grateful to have that special time with them at the end. So my dad passed in February, and at first there's a sense of disorientation, frankly. Like you are sort of programmed that, oh, it's time to do this for him and it's time to do that for him, and then suddenly he's not there. And you sort of turn around and say, where was I and how do I pick up the threads? And now things are very much back on track, kind of given a big boost by a theater project that I'll tell you about in a minute. Mm-hmm. But the writing process is, I spend usually the first part of the day writing, either at my desk or if I happen to be somewhere on location, I'll take my laptop with me and just spend the early hours writing, up to 5 hours as I get closer to completion on a book. Mm-hmm. Now, as far as the whole process of starting and then going through everything and then finishing the book, I start with outlining, and some writers don't do that, and it may not work for all projects, but I have a lot of characters, and I need to track each storyline first and make sure that I remember where I left them off and what their goal is for this particular book, and have a sense of the arc of each character. So I will plot that out, and then when it's done for each character, I will come back and sort of like braid together these different threads.
Mm-hmm.
Once I have the outline quite well done, I can write pretty quickly. There's real flow once I know what needs to happen in a particular scene or chapter.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have to have, I mean, what's your, do you, I know when I write, it has to be very quiet. I can't listen to music or, you know, distractions, probably because my mind is just going a million miles an hour. I just have to listen to what my mind is telling me. And, you know, anything that distracts from that is not good. Do you find that to be the case with you? Or are you able to listen to music or, you know, have the TV going?
Mostly, Tasha, I really am like you. I like the quiet. And it really is, writing really is a listening process, isn't it? I mean, I hear my characters talking to each other. I'll get images that will arise from the story and realize that that's something that belongs in the chapter that I'm writing. So I do need quiet. There are times when a certain kind of music might enhance the mood that I'm working on capturing. So I have some special playlists that I have put together for some of my different characters in Milford Haven.
And
it's really fun to do that. You know, I'll say, oh, okay, so this is, Miranda is painting. She's my protagonist, and she's an artist.
Mm-hmm.
So she's in her studio painting, and then I might have a playlist of what she might be listening to. And that just brings me right into the mood.
I like that. Do you ever add the playlist at the end of your books? I know a lot of authors now will do that, and they'll create these YouTube channels with playlists. Have you done that?
That's a neat idea. I haven't done that. What I have done is put in the story what the character is listening to.
Mm-hmm.
For example, in book two, Where the Heart Lives, Miranda takes a long drive from the Central Coast down to Los Angeles, and there's a certain point where she's listening to Pat Metheny, and I give the exact cut and what that music makes her think of. And then later in that story, she actually goes to a Doobie Brothers concert. And so the reader gets to go through, let's say, the playlist of the concert and get a sense of the energy in the Hollywood Bowl where they're performing and how the audience reacts to certain songs and all that. So there is a lot of specific music in the story.
Nice. I like when, you know, like the when an author combines music with the story, I think it kind of adds, yeah, it enriches the plot.
Oh, I do too. I really think that we're supposed to stimulate all the senses.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so of course, yeah, we work hard on the visuals, and then we want to work on the sounds, so you're really hearing the sounds of wherever the person is. And then mm-hmm. the tastes, right? So
wow.
I'll mention specific food, and I have the recipes at the end of the book, and
mm-hmm.
The aromas, you know.
Mm-hmm. All right, let's talk a little bit. As I mentioned, you know, you've had a lot of success with your books, and so I'm wondering, you know, what is your secret? I mean, why are you so, you know, you've been able to be so successful with your writing. And what tips would you give to aspiring writers?
Well, the first thing that pops into mind is originality and developing your own voice.
Mm-hmm.
It may be tempting to look out there at other writers who are successful and feel that you can somehow copy them. And I think that always backfires. What I think you can learn from other authors is something about their dedication and how specific they are about their subject matter. Like James Michener worked on the ancient history of each subject that he wrote about. So he wrote a book called Centennial about Colorado, and it began with the formation of the Rockies. Well, most people mm-hmm. certainly wouldn't go back that far in history, but it became a trademark for him, something that mm-hmm. readers really enjoyed and counted on, that they could always find that in each of his books. And I have a friend named Margaret Cole who writes a wonderful series of mysteries set on the Wind River Reservation in Wyoming. Well, she does a lot of research about the Arapaho people who live on the reservation, and she does research about the Caucasian community that is next to that reservation and what the relationships are like between those people. So when you read her book, you're drawn into that community and you learn something you would never know otherwise. And so her readers just love that, and they love getting to know her characters, and they feel they're learning something as they do. So in the sense of honoring that tradition of research and truthful storytelling, I think that has a lot to do with my success. I chose an area that I love and where I spend quite a bit of my time, and I really drill down into the community, the issues, the politics, the ecology, the geology, the personalities, everything about the community. I'll never know it all, so there's always something more to learn, and then I can share that with my readers through my characters. So I think mm-hmm. your setting for the story is important, and your own sense of that setting. I mean, no one can see exactly what you can see, and your job mm-hmm. is to really share deeply from your heart what you see and what you feel, different from sort of following some kind of a formula, which I just don't think it can work nearly as well.
Yeah. It's interesting, though, because you do see a lot of books that do follow a formula, that do very well, but they're really not, they're really poorly written. You know, mm-hmm. I mean, I don't like to criticize writers because I write myself, but I will just for example say, and this is nothing against E.L. James, but if you look at the 50 Shades trilogy, it has spawned a whole, you know, genre of these kind of books that, you know, to me, they're not aesthetically pleasing. To someone else, they may be, you know, they may be. But why do you think that is? Why do you think that these books like that have so much success?
Well, I wonder if it's something like junk food that, you know, McDonald's has sold however many millions and millions and millions of hamburgers. That doesn't mean that it's the best quality food, that it helps your body burn fuel most efficiently. It doesn't mean mm-hmm. that you've had the loveliest experience in one of their restaurants. It just means that it was quick, easy, and accessible.
Right.
And there's a place for that in life. There are times when you're starving, you don't have any time, McDonald's is perfect. But I wouldn't say it's what you want to build your nutritional program upon any more than you would want to build your lifetime of reading upon something that may temporarily stimulate and kind of titillate the senses. I think eventually it's not satisfying and we look for something deeper.
Right. I love the analogy of McDonald's.
Yeah.
That's really I like that. Okay. No, again, no offense to E.L. James. God bless her. She's made a lot of money, so.
Yeah.
You know, respect that. So.
Yeah. Sort of connected to the last question, Maura. How important is it that your books convey a message?
Well, to me, that's everything.
Mm-hmm.
To me, that's the whole point of doing it. And I ask myself, James, I'm always asking myself again, what is my message? And am I really telling it? Am I really sharing it? I think I think I owe that to myself and I owe that to my readers. You know, I was thinking about Louis L'Amour. Did you ever read Louis's books?
Yeah.
He was a mentor and a dear friend, and he wrote, I think, iconic stories. Some people say, yeah, well, all his stories are so similar. But the thing is, they were similar because they told the same truth. To me, if I had to boil it down to something simple, I would say his stories are usually about men who have to slay their dragon. They have to handle a big crisis. It's their way of testing themselves and coming to respect themselves. And once they've done that, then they can buy the home, establish the ranch, find the right woman, have a family, join the community. But until they've done that, they're roaming. They're looking for that key adventure that is going to kind of unlock their potential. And because that's such a true thing about the nature of the growth and development of a man, it was always interesting, even if he told a similar story. This one was in New Mexico, and that one was in California, and, you know. But it was like, yeah, I want to hear that story again because I really want to get at the truth of what he's saying.
Yeah. So switching gears a little bit, in addition to being an award-winning, best-selling author, you're also a talented musician. Tell our listeners a little bit about your music.
Well, my music has, it's never been the main thrust of my career, but it has always been a golden thread that weaves its way through. And I grew up in Japan, which was a very rich, wonderful experience. I went to a school with 40 nationalities represented by the student body. And when I was a child, I saw this instrument, the koto, which looked just magical to me. And my mother noticed my interest, and she arranged for me to have a couple of lessons, and I really took to it. So she found an estate sale where she could buy a koto for me that didn't, you know, cost the same as the house. And I started playing it, and I met a composer, really interesting composer, who was born in Tokyo but raised in New York, and he had worked with Jerome Robbins. Jerome Robbins was the creator of West Side Story and many Broadway shows, and he also had a career as a choreographer in classical ballet. Well, Jerry Robbins was interested in having my friend Teiji Ito compose for a kind of autobiographical dance of his for the New York City Ballet. And Teiji, in turn, hired me to be one of the musicians. And so starting when I was, I think I was 19 and still in college, I began performing at Lincoln Center on the koto.
Oh,
and it's just been an amazing experience. Every few years, this ballet comes back into repertoire, and we gather and we play this music again. But it has also led to an opportunity to do several CDs. So I have some CDs.
And you did those on iTunes, correct? And CD Baby, is that right?
Yes, they are. Mm-hmm. And I have these brilliant collaborators, Marilyn Harris and Mark Wolfram, and they produced an album called Koto Keys. And it's Marilyn Harris on piano, which is the keys, and it's me on koto, which is the koto. And it's a kind of contemplative, kind of like spa music, but really beautiful. And we've had a great response to that CD.
Okay.
Well, everyone go get it. Buy it.
yeah.
Mark, tell everyone, well, first of all, let's talk a little bit. You were telling us prior to the show that you're doing a play. Let's talk a little bit about your play and how it, I think it coincides with your books, right?
It does. This is so uncanny that you might get a few chills when I tell you some of this story. Okay, so a number of years ago, I read a lovely play called Sea Marks by Gardner McKay, and it was one of those moments when you just know you have to do the play. So I tried to get a theater. There was a theater in L.A. that was interested, but the co-star they wanted wasn't available, so it went on hold. Then one day I get a call from my manager to say, I have a friend who's looking for a co-star. I think this might be good for you. I asked the play name. He said Sea Marks. I practically screamed on the phone, I'll do it. And he said, well, I haven't even told you who it is and where. And I said, it doesn't matter. I have to do this play. So he introduced me to Christopher Law, who was going to be my co-star. We shook hands. We got in the car. We drove 4 hours north from Los Angeles to this little town of Cambria. We did a cold reading for the owners of the Pewter Plow Playhouse. They were in tears by the end of it and said, yes, we've got to do this. So they had us perform the play for the entire summer. And this is quite a few years ago. We had a great success with the play, and we had people came up from L.A., and including casting people and producers. And as a matter of fact, I ended up with a job on Days of Our Lives shortly after finishing the run of Sea Marks. The casting director's friend had seen me and recommended me, and that's how I got my interview. So then a couple of things connected. One, I had fallen in love with Cambria, this beautiful little coastal town. I had never really spent time in a small town, but it seemed to me this would be a wonderful framework for storytelling. And secondly, here I was working on a soap, and I fell in love with that form of storytelling. It's a longer form of storytelling, and it tracks the decisions people make and the results of those decisions. Well, there was a gentleman up in Cambria who owned the local radio station, and he had said, after seeing the play, gosh, if you ever want to do something on radio, let me know. Well, I called him and said, how about a radio soap opera? He said, you know, I've always wanted to do that. So I started thinking about, let me create a show loosely based upon Cambria. Well, Cambria is the ancient Roman name for Wales. So I knew that I wanted to find the name of a Welsh town, and I chose Milford Haven. And I started writing the script and found a cast and a crew, and the show went on the air in Cambria, and it really was an overnight hit. We had a wonderful hit up here. Of course, that was tremendously exciting. But then I thought, you know, there's such local interest here. I need to prove whether or not this show can work somewhere else. So I found out that Rochester, New York is a big test marketing city for lots of products. So I drove there. I mean, I flew there, drove around, found a radio station, talked to them, got on the air. And Milford Haven was just as successful there as it had been in the Central Coast. And I thought, I think I've got my finger on the pulse of something here. Life in a small town. Truthful storytelling. So we continued producing episodes. Well, lo and behold, the BBC heard about my show, and we became the first American radio serial they had ever broadcast. Of course, we were tremendously excited about that, but then we were kind of worried, too, because we were going to be up against some of the best radio drama in the world. Mm-hmm. Well, about 6 weeks in, the head of the network called and said, "You might like to pop over. It's doing rather well." And I asked her what she meant, and she said 4.5 million listeners.
Wow.
Wow.
That's, yeah.
So, very exciting. And so I go there to do a press tour. But the icing on the cake was that the original town of Milford Haven invited me for a visit.
Oh,
well, when I got there, they gave me a parade.
Oh, my goodness.
And they gave me a reception in their town hall. I mean, it was just an astonishing experience, a beautiful time. Okay, so here's a little bit of the uncanny thing. Several years later, I get married, I tell this to my husband, and he kind of missed all that experience and could hardly imagine what had happened. So I said, well, let's go back and have another visit to Milford Haven. And just as we were leaving, I spoke with my aunt, and she said, you know, we have people from there. And I said, yes, I know we have family from Wales, but I'm not very clear about it. And she said, no, I mean we have people from Milford Haven, Wales.
Oh, my goodness.
What?
Oh, wow.
So I was writing my roots without even knowing
it.
Incredible. Oh,
wow. So amazing, right?
That made me feel. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, see? Yeah. So we're in Wales, and we're in the mayor's chamber, and I'm telling this story. And they said, well, what was the name of your ancestor? And I said, well, he was Granddaddy Goff. Oh, yes, Goff. Here he is. There's a picture of him because he used to be the mayor.
Wow.
So that was just
really
unbelievable.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, time goes by. The show does well. Several more years pass. And then I get involved. Publishers want me to write my books that's based on the Milford Haven radio show, which is based on Cambria. Well, so last year, my former co-star got back in touch with me. We hadn't talked in years. And it was an anniversary of the original production. And we thought, well, let's call the owners of that playhouse. Well, Mr. Buckley was then 101. And he said, we'd love to have you come back and do the show again. So here we are doing Seamarks. We're having the best time. We're back in the same playhouse. The shows are sold out. The audiences are loving it. And, you know, coming back to this material with all this life experience, we're doing so much better with our performances than we could have done. I mean, when I was in my 20s, I was a competent actress. And, you know, I know we did a good job, but I can bring so much more to it now.
Mm-hmm.
And I keep finding deeper things in the text. So as I've grown as a writer, and we were talking earlier about the core message and what you're really saying underneath it all, that's what I look for now in this play. And it's there, so I get to bring that to the audiences. It's just thrilling.
Right.
Awesome.
Well, Mark, tell everyone where they can find your books, your music, and where they can see the play.
All the information is on my website, which is marapearl.com. And, you know, I spell my name M-A-R-A and my last name P-U-R-L. So there's a calendar tab that has the dates and information about all the performances. And there's information about the books and about my music.
Mm-hmm.
And then if people enjoy shopping at certain places, there are links on my website that will take you to Amazon or Barnes & Noble, or if you like ebooks, it'll take you to Kindle or Nook or Kobo. So that's probably the easiest way to find everything.
Oh, that's lovely. And you also, you're on Twitter? I know you're on Facebook.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
everyone your username for Twitter?
For Twitter is just Mara Pearl.
Okay.
And Facebook is the same. Yeah, Mara Pearl.
Okay. All right. Well, we always like to ask our guests a series of random questions. It's kind of our a tradition around here. I'm not sure if we started it when we had you on last time. I'm not sure we asked you any random questions, but it's something that has evolved and we enjoy doing.
That
hopefully,
like
you'll feel the same.
Okay.
Sure. All righty. Okay. Well, the first question isn't actually really a question. But describe yourself in 5 words. I thought we should have some Jeopardy.
Tall, funny, earnest, hopeful, intense.
I like that.
Cool.
And,
yeah. Very good.
Very good. Okay, your next question. If you could only look at one cityscape for the rest of your life, which would it be?
New York.
Yeah.
New York. Awesome.
I don't know. London would be. Up there too,
yeah. All right. So, if there were to be a movie made about your life, who would play you, and what would the title be?
The title, Making Her Mark. Liv Tyler.
Nice.
Good choices. Yeah, I like that.
Yeah, that's one of Mel's crushes. One of many.
Mm-hmm. Not as many as some, but anyway. So what's the last
what?
Song? What?
You want to go now? I'm sorry. I'm trying to have an argument with him. And he's being rude. Go ahead now. Let's ask your question. I'm sorry.
All right. Next question. We'll take this up later. Next question. What's the last song you sang in the shower?
You Are My Sunshine.
Oh, that's a great song. I
sang it to my sweetie pie.
Oh, that's so sweet. I love it. If you owned your own country, who would you get to write your national anthem?
Marilyn Harris and Mark Wolfram.
Okay.
Oh, good ones. Yeah. What's your idea of the perfect day?
A latte, a croissant, 3 hours of writing a chapter that goes really well, a walk on the beach, a yoga class, a romantic dinner with my husband, a beautiful sunset over the water, and watching a really great movie, followed by X-rated.
Okay, that does sound pretty ideal. Okay. Well, this next question, a lot of times people, because of my southern accent, don't understand what I'm saying, so let's see if Mara gets it. What is your favorite sound? What is your least favorite sound?
Favorite sound is the ocean waves.
Mm-hmm.
Least favorite sound, a power saw.
Mm-hmm.
Are you the paranoid type or cool, calm, and collected?
Cool, calm, and collected, usually.
Yeah.
Okay, can you do any impressions? And if so, would you care to demonstrate?
I cannot do exactly impression. However, I can do accent I run in Tokyo, growing up and having many friends who are Japanese.
That's very good. Bravo. Bravo.
Good one, yeah. All right, last question. If you were Alice in Wonderland, would you stay there or come back and share your story?
Oh, come back and share my story.
Mm-hmm.
That makes perfect sense. Mm-hmm. Well, Mara, it's been an absolute pleasure to have you on. You're always such a delight, and I just
appreciate
you. You know, like I said, you were a guinea pig that first time, so we're really happy you wanted to come
back.
Yeah. Oh, you have a great show. I'm so impressed with all that you've accomplished since you started, and I just love that you have a show called La Literati. That's just awesome.
Oh, thank you so much. Well, you know, you have an open invitation to come back anytime.
Thank you. I would love to.
Definitely.
And everyone, please go out, buy Mara's books, her music, go to her website, marapearl.com. Is that correct?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And, you know, because she's a wonderful writer, a brilliant musician, an extraordinary actress, I would say, too. And before you go, let's talk, you talk briefly. You wrote a book with Erin Gray on acting.
Yeah.
Is that right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Our book is called Act Right.
That's right.
And we wrote it for young performers. You know, when we used to hike every day, and we would tell each other stories about all the stupid mistakes we made when we were young actresses trying to figure it out. And we thought, gee, there must be a book about this. And then there wasn't. So we wrote it, and it's we're in the third edition. Now we're working on updating it again. So it takes an actor from auditioning all the way through to the end of a film project. It gives a glossary. It's really good information that will save you time and embarrassment so that you understand a bit more about how the business works.
Perhaps sometime you can come back and we can discuss that if you'd like. All right.
Yeah, love to.
And you also you do seminars, correct, on writing and.
I do. I do quite a lot. I speak at a lot of writers' conferences, and I speak at Author U, which is an annual in Colorado in the fall, and I speak at the Central Coast Writers Conference. And yes, I love meeting with and working with other writers.
Well, I'm sure they appreciate your help.
Yeah.
Well, we wish you a lovely rest of the day out in California, I believe. Well, I hope that you get to see your sunset and get to the X-rated material later on. And
thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you so much.
Take good care.
Mara.
Bye, Mara.
She's lovely.
Yeah, she is.
Very articulate.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was cool to have her back.
It was, and again, you know, our first show. I mean, when I go back and I listen, I remember my voice. I could barely talk. And you know, it was Niles' first time on the radio, and it was interesting. I thought it was really, and I think too she's very thoughtful with her answers, so she always pauses. And
yeah.
I think that because it was our first show, it was kind of freaking us out because did we ask her something wrong? I mean, did she not like the question? But she's just, you know, she was taking time to reflect. And but it was definitely a memorable show and a lot of fun. So
yeah,
I'd like to have you back. And next week we have another returning guest, Karen Tyrell. She's the author of children's books, a mental health advocate, a teacher, and she's from Australia, so she has that lovely Australian accent. Good day, mate. And mine doesn't quite measure up. But she's always a delight, and she'll be calling in on Skype, and it's always interesting when people call in on Skype. It's always interesting.
Yeah, we kind of cross our fingers that everything.
Yeah, we do.
Mm-hmm.
But I had to laugh the last time we were on, her husband.
that was hilarious.
He was yelling to her, "You're on the air."
Yeah.
That was more of a British accent. But it was it was classic. It was so funny because you could just hear him yelling.
Yeah, he had put the phone down, but you could still hear him in the background.
Yeah. It was great. Yeah, Karen! It was so funny. And then, of course, we had our dear friend Mark Griffith on from
Brit,
but he was in now. Oh, dear. Oh, my goodness. I love Mark. and he is one of the most intelligent people you will ever meet. But when it comes to anything technical, forget it. And I kept telling him how to call in. And he says, "What? But Tosha, I'm like, Mark, please read the instructions.
Yeah.
If I can figure this out, you can." It was hilarious. And like I said, I feel comfortable saying this because Mark knows. He may know because we laugh about it now. But it was...
Really quickly, our live time is about to be out. We appreciate all our live listeners, and you can listen to the rest.
Thanks, Tamara.
You can listen to the rest in the archive. But all right, so now we're in recorded time. But he was emailing both of us. You know, what do I do?
Yeah.
Well,
do I do? Oh, okay, that's more of a Cockney accent. Mark is more posh. What do I do? I don't know. Tosha. Nile. Whereas my friend calling me like, "Oi, mate, calm down now. Calm your knickers."
Oh, no. Oh, boy.
Yeah. Oh, dear. Well, anyway, let's again, please, everyone, go to Mara's site, marapearl.com. Check out her books, see where she's performing, buy her music, perhaps attend one of her seminars, and again, our thanks to Mara. And I guess we should wrap it up, because we can ramble, but we'll save that for a roundtable. What do you think?
Well, and before we wrap it up, speaking of books, Tosha also has a couple of books. You can find them under Tosha Michelle, and you can find them at Amazon and Barnes and Noble, and any way that you buy books. So check those out.
And Niles has a blog you can read poetry and nonfiction at www.jamesdennard. That's dennard.com.
I appreciate that.
So, yes, we do our best to try to promote each other. And also, you know, our friend Terry, and let's just promote for a moment. Let's start with Terry, our darling Terry, our little New York hot Italian mama. She has a blog on WordPress where she started publishing this really lovely poetry. You're going to have to tell me the website because I'm not sure.
It's tdem61.wordpress.com.
Okay, lovely. And then our friend Jane, who has, you know, she's really developed an interest in photography and takes such beautiful, beautiful pictures. We finally got her over to WordPress, and you can find her under Perceptions Photography by Jane, I believe. Check it out. Got some lovely, lovely, lovely pictures, especially like nature shots or city shots, you know, street scenes. She's the... I don't even know what I'm trying to say. She's the place to look. She's the place to look.
Why not?
Her blog is the place to look. How about that?
And yours is laliterati.com, same as the show. So that's an easy one for our listeners to remember.
Yep. And is there anybody else you want to plug while we're thinking? Because I don't want to leave anybody out because that's just rude. I don't know, I guess. I mean, there's a lot of wonderful blogs on WordPress, you know, just a lot of wonderful poets and, you know, perhaps one day, maybe we can do a show one day just kind of devoted to WordPress and promoting some of the people on there.
That'd be fun.
Yeah, it'd be a nice thing to do. I also think we were supposed to have a show with some of SR's Angels, and I had forgotten.
Well, they had started, a couple of them that had started a podcast, right? Talking about their podcast,
We'll have to see what happened with that. Maybe we'll do it the first of the year. Oh, I forgot to tell you now. I'll just tell everybody now. Our friend Allison Burnett sent a writer our way. So he wants to come on the 1st of February, the first Thursday in February. His name is Alan. I can't remember never. I probably should have just. This would be better just in a private conversation because I can't. I don't know anything about him right yet. So I just know. But yeah. He's, you know, recommended by Allison, and you know, any friend of Allison is a friend of ours.
Mm-hmm. So stay tuned for that.
Yeah. So stay tuned. But he's written two books, and I think one of them is a murder mystery. So, and I believe he's an actor, and he's out in L.A. And that should be fun. But I guess, mm-hmm. and then the next year, you know, we're going to try to get Mark Kingwell back. So he's always a hoot. We enjoy Mark. We enjoy ribbing Mark and giving him a hard time. And mm-hmm. we have to say, Misty, darling, if you're listening, you have taken this Kingwell mania to a new level. And I just respect for that. She has taken it to a whole nother level. It's mania on top of insanity on top of, you know.
We like Mark Kingwell around here.
We do. He's a likable guy and very intelligent to boot. So. To boot, see, I'm going to do my Canadian. That was an honor of Mark being Canadian, to boot.
Mm-hmm.
So, mm-hmm. And
I like that. Mm-hmm.
To boot. But a boot. That's different, but. But anyway, so, and we're also going to do more roundtables. We're going to, you know, do some literary discussions about Hemingway and Poe and Southern authors. And then, of course, we'll have our roundtables where we just talk about the ridiculous, so, which mm-hmm. normally is what, you know, when we start out to have a serious conversation, it usually evolves into something utterly ridiculous. But that's
weaves in and out of serious and funny and mm-hmm. back to serious.
Yeah. We're definitely not NPR, but we're not Howard Stern either.
mm-hmm.
But anyway, it's been a delight. You know, it'll be a year, I think, in January right now, so at least.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think it's a little more than a year. I think our first show was actually in December of 2013. I think I think we didn't have Mara until January, but I think we had one kind of introductory sort of show, if I recall correctly.
Well, time flies.
I may be totally misremembering, but
I can't remember either. But at any rate, it's been a while, so we've had some really amazing, it's like the most mm-hmm. overused word.
Mm-hmm.
It's just amazing. It's like so amazing. We had such amazing guests. Oh my God! But no, we really have. We've had some incredible guests. So.
Yeah, made a lot of friends. It's been cool.
It has been cool. I do have to say, I just have one more other thing to talk about, and then we're gonna. We wrap this up. But I talked about the CMAs last night. This is just totally...
Uh-huh.
For those of you who are just expecting a literary podcast, I'm sorry. I thought, and this is definitely turning into more of Entertainment Tonight now, but I thought it was so tacky of Gwen uh-huh. Stefani and Blake Shelton to finally admit they were dating about an hour before the CMA Awards when, you know, his ex-wife is there nominated. I just thought it was tacky. Sorry, I thought it was next. Blake, I'm very disappointed to you. And talk about a weird couple. That is Gwen Stefani. I honestly could see him more with Caitlyn Jenner than I could Gwen Stefani. It's bizarre mm-hmm. to me. But mm-hmm. I wish them well. I hope that they're very happy. I'm being mean. But I'm still team Miranda. But if Miranda's cool with it, I'm cool with it. If she's not, then, you know, we'll get the gunpowder and let out. That's Miranda's song. But but I did think it was a little tasteless to do it right before. I mean, you can't wait one more day. I don't know. And then I'm sure it wasn't intentional. But anyway, so that's my gripe.
I don't know. Sometimes things get leaked. You never know.
Oh, no. They're reps. There's been, you know, rumors on and off for a while, but the reps actually released a statement.
Okay, the rep was
an hour before that. Yeah, and I just thought, wow, that's not nice. But again, I mean, maybe Mara is now ex Blake Shelton's ex-wife. Miranda, maybe, you know, she was cool with it, and you know, and look, I don't know their lives, so and I don't easily get really that invested in celebrities' lives. But you know, I've always been a fan of Miranda, which is odd because, you know, country music's usually not my, I mean, I like it, but she's about as country as you can get. But, you know, I think I got a chance to meet her and see her in person, and she just puts so much energy. She's such a wonderful entertainer and just a genuinely nice person. So. Anyway, so I'll get over it. She looked really cute last night. She had a little pink in her hair. It was adorable. So, Miranda,
well,
girl power.
Yeah.
You can do much better than what.
Yeah. On a similar note, I don't think I've quite ever gotten over Faith Hill getting together with Tim McGraw.
Well, you know, there's rumors about them too, so, you know, they're the dream.
Really? Well, yeah.
I don't think it's true. I don't think it's true, but there's always, you know, I think when you're in the public eye, there's always people, you know, they're going to speculate. But you never know, Niles, you little homewrecker. You know?
I'm keeping my eyes on I'm keeping my eyes on the internet for any news on that front because, you know, you mentioned my celebrity crushes earlier. She's way up high on my list of celebrity crushes.
Oh, I can endorse your Faith Hill crush for sure. Some of them I can't, but I can definitely endorse Faith Hill. And she's
Got
that. She's a little bit older. Good.
Yeah, she's a few years older.
And I will give Blake, I have to say, props to Blake. Gwen Stefani's a few years older than him, and it's age appropriate. So, God bless you, Blake. Although she looks 20 years younger than he does. Oops, sorry, Blake. Blake, he's listening. But, you know, so that's good. We get props from that, because I really would be annoyed if he was dating a 20-year-old right now.
But, you know, unlike most of my celebrity crushes, I actually got to meet Faith Hill and have a picture taken with her way back in the day.
Oh, I want to see. I did not know this. How did I not know this?
I'll see if I can dig up the picture and send it to you sometime. It should be somewhere around here. But it was 96, I believe, so kind of like right at the height of her popularity. You know, she first, you know, got in and was really popular on the country scene, and then she kind of had a crossover, you know, a couple of crossover songs before she really became a hit, you know, on the pop charts. And this was kind of right as she was starting to rise on the pop charts and starting to date Tim McGraw.
Dude, you missed your chance. Oh, my goodness, Niles.
I know. Well, at this point, nobody knew, though. They hadn't yet. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they had kept it a secret at that point. I was still, you know, I didn't ask her out, but I was thinking about saying, hey, you want to go get a cup of coffee after the show, you know?
Yeah. Can I come back to your tour bus?
So anyway, yeah.
Well, that's interesting. I look forward to seeing that picture. And like I said, keep the dream alive. You never know. I'm just terrible.
Yeah.
That's so terrible. Keep the dream alive. Hey, I really hope they get a divorce. So now, who cares if they have children? Who cares about wedding vows? Let's just, you know, you're a celebrity couple. You should have, you know. How's this marriage so long anyway?
There you go, folks. That's our call. He is an Indian outlaw.
Well, we shall see. I will say this: if Tim and Faith do break up, just look, you know, to look at Niles. He'll probably be making the headlines. TMZ will be in Macon, outside his house, trying to get the scoop.
That would be fun. That would be fine with me.
People Magazine, there'll be a picture of Faith and Tim together, and then the bubble, there'll be Niles' head.
Yeah, you can email us at the show email, and, you know, we can exchange numbers, and, you know.
Oh my goodness, man, we really went on a tangent on, didn't we? Oh, it started with CMTs and Lake Shelton.
Well, yeah. When you talk about Miranda and you know, when the subject comes to anything,
well, Miranda's single. She's single now.
Yeah.
I think she's a little too tough for you. I think she would probably. I don't know. She's sassy.
She's a sassy one.
I don't know if that would work out very well.
Yeah, you kind of get that impression from her music, don't you? Like, all
she's
her songs
adorable,
have that, have that attitude.
It's funny, though, because,
yeah,
you know, she does have this kind of, this sort of, excuse my language, like this badass chick vibe going, but she's really so sweet and very girly. Although, I mean, she's a country girl, you know, she likes to hunt and shoot guns and stuff, but at the same time, she has this girly side where she likes pink, you know, pink fingernail polish. So, I don't know.
The best of both worlds.
We love Miranda.
Yeah.
Team Miranda.
Team Miranda.
Niles and Miranda sitting in a tree. Waiting for Faith to, I don't know. Niles and Miranda sitting in a tree. Waiting for Faith to D-I-V-O-R-C-E.
There's a poem there, I think, isn't there? A poem,
I think,
a
it's
going
to be
brilliant.
I can't wait to write it. Or maybe you could write it. Faith could be your muse and Miranda. I don't know about that one. Someone asked the other day if I'd ever written a poem about Pecker, and I was like, oh, yeah.
Yeah,
really
you definitely one. You definitely have. Yep.
He is my greatest muse. But anyway, all right, well, I suppose we should wrap this up. Now, Kieran's show is next. Help me out, Niles. When is it? I know
Tuesday.
It's next week. Next Tuesday at 7 p.m.
Yeah.
So it'll be in the evening. Yeah, that'll be, like, it's a very sweet lady.
Yeah.
And, she does a lot to, you know, raise awareness about mental illness and about bullying. And she's just a very sweet, sweet lady. Very genuine. So she's always a pleasure. And I guess on that note, again, Mara, thank you. It was kind of in where we began. Go to Mara's website, buy her books, her CDs, MaraPearl.com. And then you can follow her on Twitter and Facebook to keep up with her as well. So I think we're good. I think we're golden.
Yep, we are golden.
We need to let Niles go so he can start plotting his the demise of Faith and Tim's marriage.
I'm gonna drive up to Nashville, so
there's a start.
I'll see you folks on the other side.
All righty, well, okay, if Niles ends up in jail, we'll know why. So he'll call me to bail him out, you know, tomorrow probably.
Your number will be on speed dial.
Okay, all righty. All right, everyone. Well, until next time. Now, we need like a tag. We always say, we need a catchphrase or a tagline for our show. Because we always say on Tit Touch, we always say, stay chatty. So what would be our tagline? Keep reading?
Chatty. Yeah, you know.
Keep reading.
Read something good. I don't know.
We have to work on this.
Stay literary.
Stay literary. There you go. Wow, so original. Okay. Goodbye, everyone. Have a lovely evening, and we will hopefully see you on Tuesday, right?
Bye, everybody.
Bye.